The history project right now is where, let me just see if I can, oh, there we go. But the history project right now is we're getting into the beta, starting a beta test phase for the website. And I'll come back with a little more detail, but just to give the main message first, we're out recruiting. So Glenn Shore will talk about the occupational health and safety sections 100th coming up. Nancy Gilbert later will show some exemplars for the public health nursing from on their 90th. And so we're looking for some more volunteers because the experience is once you get a section here, a caucus, a SPIG up, we'll get more to come in as long as someone sees. So please think about the participation in this. So the history, the group, the advisors, and let me give credit to Dr. Liz Fee and Ted Brown, who will be on our program, who are the co-editors on our journal, and do Voices of the Past and the history then and now. And I'm here also speaking for Debbie Klein Walker, who couldn't be here. I think she's getting an award right now, and I allowed her to go receive her honor. We're very tolerant in this group. And Carla Pierce, and I wanted to mention Carla. APHA has a part-time historian. A part-time librarian. She only comes in once a week on Thursday. If you're in D.C. on Thursday, go to APHA. But that's the entire, quote, staff to manage the historical records. And so I'm not going to go into all the aspects of the project, except to say that it would be one thing, and Ted has made suggestions about the need to organize this better and to be able to see what we make available. So let me then, the plan is I'll give an overview of the project, like the ubiquitous PowerPoint presentation, and we'll put this up on the web, incidentally, so that if you want to explain to others what the project is about, there's a handy set to say, you know, you can thumb things. But everything's open for discussion, the kind of resources that you'd like to have and the beta test. So a few words about the project itself. We're looking at a 9-year project leading up to our 150th anniversary. And that will be here in Boston. And see, that's it, Boston strong and repeat too, right? That's the other. And the idea about the 9 years is, I just want to emphasize, we want to move with all deliberate speed, but there's time. This is a volunteer group. So as things, people develop time and interest, we'll be able to accommodate it. And of course, the digital age platform that we're going to do this on is one that admits to being evergreen. We can expand, revise, and we'll come to how that will be done. Right now, this is our opening page. And you'll see at the end, we'll put up the website for that. And so this gives you a little feel for the overview. We want to basically have two big components to this. One, an authoritative side, and we mean by that it would be a history of a section or more generally APHA. And the other side is a more informal one where people can tell stories or have a blog on a topic. And so we want, and I characterize this as more like a community newspaper. If this works, one of my personal goals is it's being structured, and again, I'm thankful to principally at so far to Liz and Ted to, for the content management, and is that we could make this into a public health portal, a place for more general information about public health, not only the associational, and we'll come to some elements of that that we need to build in the project in any event. So you can see from the working open page, and this will be part of our beta test, we're going to have some special features. We're going to be able to quickly go to the various source documents. And what it is the longer term vision is one of the things is we have to synthesize material. And the other, of course, is as one moves from one section to another, there's both continuity in time, but also continuity in flow. So you don't find yourself in a whole different world trying to figure out where things are. But we do want to highlight not only the people and events, but sources. And a third aspect of it is, which we're wrestling with, is how do we pull in the big themes of public health? What are some of the persistent issues? So while we, on the one hand, want to go in depth on various areas, like what a section or a caucus or a SPIG focuses on, and historic events, but what are the running threads through this? So an example could be national healthcare reform. Another issue would be the environment. I'm just suggesting topics that people can also coalesce around as well as go into some really important and rich detail. So there's many sources to draw upon, and these are two an example from our meeting in Denver. I think it was two years ago. Was it 2 years or three? I'm losing count now. 2 years ago, in which I was towards the end of the meeting, I was out for a walk and I went to the Denver Public Library, and it turned out that Denver City Health was having its 150th anniversary, and there was nothing on the program about it. And here, the public library had this wonderful display of 150 years of history. So you can see the impetus saying, you know, we need to know about this. And it's fun. The Denver Art Museum had a display on social art, incidentally, at the same time, talking about themes in art that show life in communities. So the others say there's an abundance of material. I'll come back to this when I stamped original documents. This is a letter, it's signed by Stephen Smith, our founder. And I was on the website looking for copies of his book, The City That Was, which he published in 1911 or 1912, talking about looking back at New York City in 1872. And it just said there's Stephen Smith. One page, it said. And it was in a bookseller in California. So I bought it. You know, I think it was $50. Figured, well, what the heck, you know. It was. And it turned out that this was a letter he had written in October, as you can see, that he was apparently writing to someone named Imelda, who must be a friend of the family. And I'll come back to that in a minute. But this is what I mean about getting some original documents, sources that may be available. We don't know anything. Diverse media. So, yes, we do want to have on there the video and art and all the accompanying themes. So the major aim, though, is to use our social networking capability within the association and and also extra association. And so we're going to want people to get connected, express what they may be interested in, find a place for them to coalesce, and to do it in a user-friendly friendly way. And that's going to be part of the beta test. We started, this is just a few examples, started to collect some articles and material around our founders. And so the example here is Stephen Smith, to come up with a biography, a brief biography of him. I was happy to locate this picture of Stephen Smith. Where was it? It was on a website from a retired physician in Florida who has a website on Civil War medicine. I had learned early on that Stephen Smith authored the most used surgical manual of the Civil War on the Union side. I didn't know anything about this. And so, but this site had a picture of the young Stephen Smith. We always see the picture of Stephen Smith when he was 93 or 99. But this is a picture of Stephen Smith around the time he formed APHA. So again, there's lots of good things out there that we can draw upon. Of course, the person on the website said, please use whatever you want. And so we have Stephen Smith's medical diploma from Bellevue Hospital in New York. I mean, he had this entire collection on again, because he was so prominent in Civil War medicine at the time. And we were talking about antecedents of the association, so think of founders. And at an earlier session this morning, Charles Rosenberg, professor of history at Harvard, was recounting the circumstances of the formation of the association. So most of the founders had been many of them had been engaged in the Civil War. And this was, of course, very much on their minds as a searing experience, as well as public health. And I will let Ted say a bit more about that if he wishes in his comments. So this is going to be designed, as I say, now the major is to launch our beta test site, and we're beginning to populate that now, and this project's name will change every year. It's APHA at 141 and counting. Next year it's going to be 142 and counting, and sort of keep our timeline flowing. And as I say, my organization, Medicine and Public Health Initiative, is donating the starter website. The project is being structured to request no funds from APHA. We don't want to be in a position for competing with scarce resources. So we do need to go out and raise our own resources as we move along. And at the end, when it's deemed ready for use, it's going to be on the APHA site. It's on the MPHI site, so we can rip it up, tear it apart, you know, but still have a usable site for people to post material, and as well as to see how we're progressing. So some of the features of the site itself. First of all, we want to keep the site fresh and have some kinds of maybe things like histories, mysteries, little issues to keep people engaged and contributing to it. So the backside, for example, that's up there, it says at 97. This was the reverse side of that type letter that I showed you. Stephen Smith wrote a poem at his age 97. And this poem was published in Good Health magazine. And Good Health magazine, it turns out, was authored by Hershey, Dr. Hershey, Dr. Kellogg, excuse me, of Battle Creek, Michigan. And Dr. Kellogg, who with his brother Fred, I believe that was his name, launched Kellogg's Corn Flakes. I'll come back to that in a minute. And they were close colleagues. So I learned in a visit to Rochester at Ted Brown's department, where he's a professor of, distinguished professor of history at Rochester University. And it's Joan Rosen, that she, Joan Rubin, thank you for agreeing. Joan Rubin, a colleague whose expertise in area is in poetry and particularly, told me, well, it's very common that a gentleman of this time would write a poem. So that explained to me what was happening here. And so he had taken this poem and typed a letter to this on the reverse of this to someone called Imelda, and how it got to California, the bookseller had no idea. And that's going to be one of my mysteries. Who is Imelda? And how are they linked together? Clearly it was a family letter. And like any author, incidentally, he was busy correcting it. On the reverse side, he's still adding to the printed poem. And on the reverse is his letter to Imelda. So, and incidentally, where he lived at that time, I've tracked the census records. You can go and look at the census records and online, and either National Archives or Ancestry.com. That at this time he was at this time of his life, he was at 97. He was living with a daughter on Park Avenue, in a building that still exists today. It was 5 years old at the time he wrote this letter, and is one of the most expensive co-ops in New York City. So I'm trying to think, I wonder what Stephen Smith would have thought about his dwelling unit now. It was the place, incidentally, this on Park Avenue. Did anyone ever read Diaries of a Nanny? It was an exposé that a nanny wrote about some of the people who lived in this building. And the co-op was so incensed that they passed a co-op law that no nanny could ever write about the people essentially she worked for. So again, these are all little things that I thought might make nice, interesting side stories in our journey. But the point that I wanted to come to now is that while we have the general pages on the history, timelines, we also want to make it easy for anyone to have their own web page. So we're going to have a dedicated web page. This example just says state affiliate. We say authors and state affiliates. This goes with caucuses, SPIGs, any of the membership group can have their own web page. And the only thing we're going to do is just have a header that's common to all, like a description of who the section SPIG and so on. So if you go from one to another, you got to have an orientation. And after that, it's up to anyone to manage it, be password protected, and everyone would manage their own web page. And so we've gotten to the stage now where we have produced the user's manual, which I'll say a few words about. Anyway, this is a little blow up of the poem that he wrote and his letter to Imelda. What was good about the letter to Imelda was it showed the human side of Stephen. He made a few jokes in the letter to her. And you know, you always see this very staid Victorian gentleman standing fairly stiffly somewhere, and then you see a human side to him. And one thing I'm interested in is tracking down his family, who are their descendants of Stephen Smith. I'll mention another of my history's mysteries. It's not a slide. A medallion was issued on the 50th anniversary of the American Public Health Association, which would 1922. And it was struck with Stephen Smith's image on one side and then a statement about the commemoration on the other side. Those original dies still exist. It was struck in New York, and I just, again, looking on the web, I found there's no firm in New York that has this name, but there was one in Nevada. And so I called, and it was the same firm that was in New York, and they've relocated to Nevada, and they have the original dies. And so, and just the last little story, if you'll indulge me, someone had called APHA several years ago and said they have a copy of this. They have an original of this, and left their phone number. So this is 3 years later. I call the phone number, and the gentleman is still there. And the way he found it was that he was employed to tear down a building in Long Branch, New Jersey. And while he was digging around, he found a box, you know, like a little toolbox. And he opened the toolbox, and there, encrusted in some oily compound, according to him, was this metal, which he proceeded to then clean up, and then that's when he called APHA. So I've offered to buy it from him, but he doesn't know what it's worth. So I just left it that he, if he ever feels comfortable and wants to sell it, and I gave him he thinks it may be gold, pure gold. I know it. So I'm just saying, there's little things to go. I would love to get a copy, you know, have Stephen Smith that was struck on the 50th anniversary of APHA, the organization he founded. And do you know where this medal was presented? It was presented to Stephen Smith at age 99, who spoke at a banquet for him. So, again, this is one of those things that keeps me intrigued for sure. So what other things will we do? This is an example of, we would like to say, well, who are these awards that we give every year? Who are they named after? And this is a book plate. I bought a copy of a book and a title, and I opened it up. And there is, it came from Sedgwick, the most prestigious award that we give. It came from his library, because that was his book plate that was in it. So that's another little feature I have in mind, what I wanted to call history on the fly, namely flyleafs, of some of the things that have come across and whose names we've seen them. But we want to talk about, why do we have a Sedgwick Award? Who was Sedgwick? And then who are the people who have had received this awards, and what contributions did they make? So I think it's a place to again have context. I'm out collecting affiliates and state histories. Colorado will be up on the is on the site now as an example of state histories, and of course it's updatable. And we also have there's the health administration. This happens to be a copy of Tennessee. I began collecting these during my presidential year when I went around a good deal, fortunate enough to go around a good deal of a country. I was sort of like asking, "What's in your closet?" So all of these are there, and Ray Martin's here from International Health. They did a wonderful story. Naturally, we're going to need to update some of these, But we'll start by, we can begin by kind of digitalizing what's already there. So these are several opportunities, and I say the way we set up the site is you go and you to primary organizations and you click on a particular affiliate section, SPIG, caucus, and that would take you to the page that we would ask volunteers to begin to assemble and manage for us to get experience. So we're also going to put up additional readings on topic. This is an example from the injury section, you know, just background papers that would provide more in examples of enrichment. This is from the Women's Caucus in the spirit of 1848 that we will, that's these, you'll find these on the site now as starter examples. Here's another book, this that I got on the, that was on the fly leaf. This talks about, pardon me for jumping ahead here. This talks, this speaks to what another, as we want to have what I'm calling, for lack of a better phrase, affinity organizations and institutions. So we want to have something on the history of the, for example, the United States Public Health Service. And this was on the fly leaf, another book I got by two of the founders of APHA, where Heber Smith had presented to Dr. John Woodworth a copy of a book, and that was written by Stephen Smith. So we'll come back to this, and I hope, Ted, if you would say something about context, the importance of context. This down here is the bottom. I know this is hard to read. We're trying to get some material on about the effect of the Civil War and its effect on the founders and the founding and the circumstance at the time. But we want to carry those history themes up to today. I know I'm concentrating on our founding members in that period. But, you know, it's been 42 years since we last 41 years, well, 42 since it was written, 41 years since our last official history was published. So we got a lot of new ground to make up. So even though I'm talking about the past, the big challenge where you all will really be important is, so yes, we have to revisit those earlier years with this larger range, but we really need to bring us up to date over these last four decades and counting. So again, features like Time Traveler, we have an example up there to go back and look at the time of the first feeling of the Salk vaccine, and these are big features. We'd like to have time, actually a timeline for each section, SPIGs and caucus, that could tell us what their significant events are. And again, this can be something that can be developed over time. These are also great sources, naturally, from our own journal. The mentioned Liz and Fee and Ted Brown here are the editors of these many valuable sections. So we've got a lot of material. But again, synthesis around themes, around topics are going to be important. I've done, you'll see it on the site, one amateur videography by me. I interviewed Dr. Jim Steele, who's now 100 years old, and founded the Veterinary Public Health. Not only is now a SPIG, but he also founded Veterinary Public Health at CDC. And so his mind is encyclopedic, and he was very helpful to me in going back. Civil War, I didn't know that in the Civil War, meat was preserved in formaldehyde. They were worried about having safe food, quote unquote, preserved for the troops. And the growth of the beef industry and the agricultural department, the interplay of government and capital in terms of the history of food in the U.S. And the politics around that. So it's capturing, again, some of these themes that will be so important to us. And again, bringing us up to date, the picture, if those who may have gone to Vic Seidel's honorific session, talked about the demonstrations against nuclear testing and the time that APHA held protests when they met in Las Vegas over nuclear testing. And that is, again, begins to bring us up to date. So we want to collect some both classic events. The other that I've been looking into is the enormous amount of material that's available online. So Stephen Smith's book that he wrote in that was published in 1911, that's online. And so we're going to have links to that kind of material. The very earliest, before there was an American Journal of Public Health, the earlier reports are in a series of reports and papers of the American Public Health Association. Most of those are online. And so we're going to let people, check out their own sourced documents. There was an amazing book, that I think amazing, that was written by Stephen Smith in 1872, and I was amazed at the themes in it. It were a set of essays that he wrote, and they included things like the need for better mental health. He was looking at sanitariums of the time, and the need for what we'd call now is mental health reform. He wrote an essay of why medicine should have more women in the profession and the importance of women physicians. Now, this is 1872. So I really was enthralled with Stephen Smith. He could... So again, all of these kinds of things we hope to do, to have an ability also to digitalize documents. Things that we come up with that we can put online that would not formally be available. Lester Breslau was a president of APHA, who died recently. He died last year. And he and the first Afro-American president of APHA, Paul Cornelli, one was president-elect, the other is president, organized a bus tour in the 60s to six places in the United States to describe public health. And so as an example of that, we have this document now. Les gave me a copy of it. He thought it would be lost to history. And so little imaginative things that we can come up with, I had been thinking about, supposing we went back to these six sites again. What would we find has happened over the intervening, 40-plus years to these sites? So we want to have other partners also in there. We say the partners we'd expect, like the Public Health Service, the Public Health NACHO, ASTO, among others, PAHO, they just recently had an anniversary, and the National Park Service is an example. Because you remember when the superintendent of national parks 2 years ago, Jonathan Jarvis, gave the keynote address at APHA opening session. I think anyone I've talked to said it was a magnificent address because it really was about public health. It wasn't about the national park and a little bit about public health. It was the importance of linking the two together. It's also interesting, the reason for me, you can see I'm fascinated with little details, was the first national park was Yellowstone. And what year, this is before the National Park Service, what year was that? 1872, the year that APHA was founded. So again, there are some common bonds that we can build on to expand the whole notion of roles and environment. So the last line is, please help shape the project. You know, our tagline being, it's our history, we own it, and we should tell our story. So I will ask you, incidentally, please leave your contact information. All I need is your email address. And of course, if you have any other immediate suggestions, please make them as well, and we'll be in touch as we go forward. This is the site, and again, I'll send that to you if you just send me your contact, but it's www.medph, which is Medicine and Public Health. It's medph, M-E, so you can, for the Medicine and Public Health Initiative, .org, and then /APHA. But if you just go to Medicine and Public Health site, on the opening page, which we're also redoing that site as well, consistent with the kind of thing we have and we want to do here in the History Project, you'll see there's a block up there just says APHA. Yes?
I was just wondering, I might have come late. When is it going to go live?
It's on now. It's up now.
And when can the section get there?
Whenever you send us your information of who you would like to, you know, would like to have a page, and we'll send you back a password.
And then we load our own thing?
Yes. The only, just since you came in late, let me just back. The only thing we want to have is, and I'm proposing the APHA, the description on the APHA website of what the Section Speaker Caucus is, and then after that, it's up to you.
Okay.
And, videos, yes. Well, we're using YouTube. It's probably the best thing is to APHA, you know, has a lot on YouTube. I found myself, I did a 10-second, one of the sessions, I got stopped, you know, they were doing immediate reaction. Well, there's 10 seconds of me up there. But best of all, the reason I want to mention that, when you click up to it, they have Jarvis's speech on there. We mentioned the superintendent of national parks. So there you'll see a lot of other APHA material up there, and Glenn will probably say something about their search. And I'm going to let Glenn also tell you about the Stephen Smith and Thomas Edison piece. Should I mention this then? I don't want to step on Glenn's material, but through a colleague that's working on the History Project, he's in D.C., found the video, and I know they've, I think, shown it once before, of Stephen Smith wrapped in a little video with Thomas Edison. They're not together in the same frame, but talking about what we call today, what's healthy aging. And it's all about living a healthy lifestyle. And so that was contributed. So we've got to, you know, have a link to that up there. So to me, as you can see, it's very rewarding when we start, you know, the sum is greater than the parts, basically. So so that's the site. Let me stop there, and then we've got several persons, and as I say, who are helping, who I would like to call upon to give some comments and then particularly open it up. And I'll begin with Ted Brown, Dr. Ted Brown from Rochester University. Again, most distinguished person, and I don't say this lightly. He just has a named chair at Rochester, but an author, and he might even mention his book if he's up here, his latest book that will be done. I just want to publicly thank Ted as he comes up here, because there wouldn't be a project without he and Liz. We need the input of real historians, obviously, so that the authoritative side is authoritative and meets standards, and he's also helping as an entree to bring in other prominent historians, like Charles Rosenberg of Harvard, who spoke today in a very marvelous talk about reflections on the 1872 and beyond. So, Ted, let me turn it over to you.
this, but how can I refuse Jay's invitation? Here's a book with a rather dramatic and deliberately provocative title. It's called Comrades in Health, and its subtitle is U.S. Health Internationalists Abroad and at Home. We're having a whole session about this book tomorrow, the PLN Parsons session, which is co-sponsored by four of the entities in the association. That's 2:30 to 4 tomorrow afternoon. It's in the program. Several of the authors of chapters in this book, including Vic and Ruth Seidel and Paula Braveman, Howard Waitzkin, other folks, will be speaking about their chapters, and Emmanuel Byrne and I, who were the co-editors of this and have also authored several of the chapters, will be speaking as well. And one last plug, there's a book signing this afternoon at the Hesperian booth in the exposition. That's booth 811. Starts at 4, which is one of the reasons I'm going to have to disappear quickly after this session. But let me turn from that, and I wouldn't have done that, but except Jay is so gracious, gave me an opportunity. It's hard to pass that up. I'm going to take my instructions from Jay in various emails back and forth in preparing for the session quite literally, and he asked me to provide some guidance from a historian's perspective for this overall project. So let me do that as giving you a set of specific recommendations. If those of you who have already begun to collect materials, you represent a SPIG or a caucus or a section, and you've already developed your history, we'll hear about one of those sections and what they've been doing so far. These are very general guidelines, but I think they'll take us to some of the deeper issues that we discussed this morning in the session with Charles Rosenberg. So first start with the easy stuff. You can't write history if you don't have material. Jay's been illustrating the kinds of materials that he has so much fun and so much passion about tracking down and figuring out. You need the material. And especially for organizational history or section history, sub-organizational history, if you want to call it that, it is terribly important, especially given the state of the APHA archives and a once-a-week person trying to maintain them desperately. That's an overwhelming task. It is important for any of you who have materials, copies of resolutions, copies of minutes, histories that have been written, partial histories that have been written, individual reflections, people's remarks on tape, people's remarks recorded on paper, to save everything you can. Save it. Save everything. Be pack rats. And go and look for stuff that you may have hidden behind a closet door somewhere and bring it out if it has anything to do with the association or any of its subdivisions. We need it. We need to figure out how we're going to collect it, make it available. Maybe digitizing it will be the best route, but we have to find funds to do that. Digitizing is an expensive process. We have to find a way of cataloging it and making it accessible. Closely connected to that, don't cull or edit. Don't presume that something is unimportant, unless it's a duplicate. Sheer duplication we can do without. But if it's something that you're not entirely sure about, you're not clear how significant it may be, whether this is really a central or peripheral matter, it's best to save it. Are on the side of caution. Don't discard something you won't be able to retrieve later. And also, when you cull that, when you choose not to cull that, when you save everything, be especially careful not to suppress material that you think is unpleasant or embarrassing, or that might reveal a more conflicted history of the organization or of a section. Historians live for conflict. We say that history is about continuity and change. Continuity often is less conflictual. Change is very conflictual. Change and conflict are the really interesting stuff. So you want to save that, and you don't want to make any judgments about who was on the right side or the wrong side, but rather save it all, and it's not embarrassing, it's in fact enriching and provides us with all kinds of insights about what was really going on, what people's different values and perceptions and political choices were. Don't worry about that. The more divergent, the more disputed, even the more inconsistent and incoherent views are, the better grist it is for the historical mill. And we want to be able to preserve all that. I think another admonition I would make is, as early in this process as you can, in the gathering phase, form an alliance with a professional historian, a card-carrying historian, someone who has had historical training, who may work as a historian in one institution or another. They have been trained to have certain skills, certain sensitivities, that those of you who may love history but have never been formally trained in it may not have, and the alliance of people with compatible or convergent passions but with different perspectives and sets of skills is extremely important. And as you move from collecting material and building your own archives and making sure that you have documents which reflect all points of view, however conflictual and embarrassing you think they may be, they're not, they're revealing. When you move from collecting that material to actually trying to write about it, and by writing, I mean here writing something, now ultimately on paper, you'll start with your computer, but you'll write on paper, and you'll have a publication, a little pamphlet, or a book, or an article in a journal. Certainly we would welcome contributions to the American Journal of Public Health in the history sections, which are ongoing and very alive. But also writing things, as Jay has suggested, online, in blogs, in sections of the website. These are important written documents as well in the new form of digital and cyber authorship. It's important when you reach that stage to make sure that you have a good, robust working relationship with a historian, because the historian will not only tell you what kind of documents may make most interesting reading and most interesting documentation, but that historian can tell you also how to begin to approach the story that you're telling or the analysis you're offering. As Jay has indicated, one of the first things historians will try to tell you about is context. Do not separate out your individuals as if they are some special heroes with unique insights. The historian's working presumption is that however brilliant that person is, and however innovative he or she seems to be in retrospect, they were working out of a context, and it's essential to reconstruct that context. I'm thinking now of what's popped into my mind is an example of one of my most powerful emotional and intellectual moments in graduate school when I was still in my second or third year as a PhD student. And I was doing a seminar focused on Isaac Newton. We would surely regard Newton as one of the great minds of the Western sort of the whole Western series of intellectual developments. And one would think that Newton is perhaps the most original of the figures in the 17th century. Well, the seminar was aimed at reconstructing Newton's intellectual context by reading with difficulty all of his predecessors, and not just people like Galileo and Copernicus, who are obvious predecessors, but reading people who are closer in time to Newton, the most significant of whom was a man called Christian Huygens, who was able to really work towards some of Newton's fundamental findings on centrifugal force and all sorts of other things. But Huygens, who was incredibly intelligent and probably the next best mind on these topics besides Newton in the late 17th century, would lumber through a kind of demonstration, get all the steps right, but there was nothing elegant about it. It was clear, correct, very rigorous, very challenging, but there wasn't some special magic or lift to it. When you came to read Newton on, let's say, his demonstration of the oscillation of the pendulum, after having read Huygens first, you can develop, and I did, shivers down the spine. My God, I see what Newton did. I understand now for the first time the genius, because he began where Huygens left off and he leaped several hundreds of feet above where Huygens was. And that was the real quality of Newton's mind, which I could not appreciate had I not known what he had read first and struggled through and then gone beyond. It's a very loose analogy, but it works for understanding the founding fathers of the APHA or the leaders of a section. You have to understand the context in which they worked, the people, the issues, the challenges, the politics that they were reacting to, and then you can really understand and put into context what it is that they were trying to achieve and what it is they set down as their priorities and commitments and goals. I think you can do that most effectively if you've not been trained in history yourself in alliance and collaboration with historians. And I know there are many historians at various stages of their life and careers who would be delighted to form these collaborations with you and would find it a win-win situation. They would be stimulated, they'd find new material, they'd find ways of engaging themselves and their students, and it would only deepen and make more sophisticated the project as you were pursuing it. It makes sense to have that alliance. And I guess the last thing to say is that make sure that in doing this, and if you're working in collaboration, as I hope you do, with historians, I think it'll be hard to not do this, make sure your history leaves all the warts in, leaves all the lumps in. It is important to know that we're dealing with real people who have inconsistencies and not always in retrospect views that we would endorse or feel comfortable around. But unless we understand all these dimensions, we will not be able to appreciate what the history was really about and what was their real challenge and what was their real innovation against that challenge. So I'll step down now. I'll be glad to pick up the discussion as we move through the session.
Our next panelist, and Kathy is, come on up, Kathy, is the president of the board of the Massachusetts Museum of Public Health, which is a few miles away from here. And this is another source that we're going to tap for exhibitions, ways of organizing, and so forth. And I may just add, as I let Kathy take over, I've been to the Smithsonian institutions, I've been to the Library of Congress, I've National Archives, and they have been ever so generous. They see it part of their mission. If we have requests, they'll try to help us. So we're going to have a lot of, quote, good stuff, and Wait. Some of which, and much of which, but certainly Massachusetts will offer us.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. Well, I just wanted to share with you that the Public Health Museum is here in Massachusetts, and it's certainly really open and just eager, really, to collaborate with the APHA History Project. And sort of following along with what Ted was saying is the skills and knowledge of historians and what we've learned, because many of the people at the Public Health Museum on the board are public health professionals, but they're not museum people. And we do have one curator who did help us with our museum redesign, Sarah Schechner. And that is a part of when you take history or whatever it is that you're doing as a museum, it's another cut of the knowledge that you're using. And how you present that to the audience that you're looking at makes a difference. And we've had that benefit, and we're very, very pleased with that. And so we're looking to partner and collaborate, given the internet and the ways of communicating that we certainly can do this across the United States and have many possibilities of developing either projects together, or other kinds of events. And Jay, I was just thinking when Ted was talking that one other aspect of a project could be developing a chronology, because someone asked about that. And you could see how many people could contribute to something like that, and then you'd have this central, almost like vetting area, where you'd begin to look at major public health events over time, and you could restrict it to one area, one part of the United States and international. And it sort of would also just be a talking area that people could come together, and you'd have intermittent conferences about this. So again, when I spoke earlier today, I told people that everyone attending the conference today is invited to the museum. It will be open free to all attendees today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. And I hope you can come, although it's a little bit of a challenge to get there. It's true. Okay. Yes?
How do you get there?
The address is 365 East Street in Tewksbury, Massachusetts. And you can go to the website, and it'll give you a map. It's straight up on 93. Exit 42, but it'll take about, I would say it's a 30-minute drive. Okay. Yeah, unfortunately, it is not readily accessible publicly. Yeah, sorry. Anything else? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. One of the things that we wanted to think about is, as Kathy suggested, is having a sort of a visual museum on the website. And I failed to mention that we are going to have an art section, and we want to have something on literature. I've located, again, you look on the web, you'll find something, if not too many things. There's a course that I found at the one of the universities. I don't have the official permission yet, but one of the universities in which it has public health and films. So again, we're going to try to make this a really diverse and rich set of material. So with that, let me present, ask Glenn Shore to come up from the Occupational Health and Safety section. Their anniversary is next year, their 100th. And Glenn just recently came back from an assignment to OSHA for 2.5. Were you in D.C.? Or were exiled to D.C. from the great state of California, and he's returned to the California State Department of Industrial Relations as a policy advisor. And I'll just say, well, I'll let Glenn describe what they're doing, but I think, again, we need this kind of active collaboration where we can help each other out. So that was my little PR pitch here. Glenn, please.